This program is a paid commercial announcement from Jacob Media Partners and does not reflect the views of WPHT or its management.
We've never experienced a year like 2020. A deadly pandemic, political division, social unrest, natural disasters. Yet, we're still here, and now so are the holidays.
Hi, I'm John Dougherty. May this holiday season bring you joy and peace. May 2021 be a better year for all of us. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a happy and healthy new year.
Happy holidays from IBEW Local 98.
Now on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT, HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. The Labor Show with J-Doc and Krause.
If we don't move in our own direction, we're going to become extinct. In fact, in some cases, we're close to being extinct right now.
Presented by the Law Offices of Pond, Lee Hockey, Giordano. Talk, listen, and speak to the region's most influential leaders. This is The Labor Show with J-Doc and Krause.
We're here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. The Army Black Knights, J-Doc, are going to beat Navy this afternoon. They're up 12-0 with 3 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter. That game, of course, being played at West Point, another product or victim of the pandemic. But the Army-Navy game, the greatest game ever played, plays again today. Army with a lead, and it looks like for sure Army will beat Navy today. How are you, J-Doc?
I'm great, Joe, and certainly the Army-Navy game under different circumstances than normal. That tradition here in Philadelphia is a great tradition. Of course, we miss it, but it's great to see it go on. And you know what? Army deserves a victory now and then, and so I don't think anybody's crying.
Welcome in, everyone, to The Labor Show. It's a two-hour show. We're always 2 hours now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. We're live for hour number one. And, J-Doc, we've got a great labor leader that we're going to spend an hour with here in the opening hour. I will let our audience know, coming up in hour number two of the broadcast tonight, is our visit with the operating engineers from, I think it was 2 weeks ago or last week.
Yeah.
And we're going to replay that one-hour show. Great sit-down with the gang up at the operating engineers.
Oh, with Tom Duffy and company. It was phenomenal. Great facility. It was a pleasure, and by popular demand, it's great to have it on in hour number two. I'm happy to bring into the broadcast one of our great labor leaders throughout the Delaware Valley, Mike Barnes, who's the president of IATSE 8, international vice president of the National Union of Stagehands, and it's been a really difficult year. I mean, before I bring Mike in, let me say 2019 was the best year for wages and growth in membership for IATSE Local 8. 2020 was projected to be even better. On March 16th, the NBA announced it was suspending its season. Within 2 weeks, the entertainment workers went from 120% employment to zero. They call March 16th the day the music died. Mike, welcome to the broadcast. I know it's been a rough year, but you guys are doing. You've been as active as ever, number one. And you've got a 4-point plan in place since March, and a lot more going on. How are you, my friend?
Guys, I'm doing really good, and I really appreciate you having me on tonight to talk about some of the issues.
No doubt. I mean, you've been working overtime, really harder than ever. If you would talk a little bit about. First of all, you talk about March 16th, the day the music died. Comment on, obviously, 2019 was incredible. It was projected 2020. Tell us a little bit about that.
So the entertainment industry, obviously, has been around time immemorial. Our union was chartered in 1893. And if you go back in our history, you'll see very clearly that we've been somewhat, luckily, recession-proof, depression-proof, and a lot of the forces of the economy that affect other people negatively oftentimes did not affect the entertainment industry. They said that people, even in the worst times, seek out entertainment and bars, which both do very good during those downtimes. But with everything that we have experienced, and you know, I don't go back to 1918, we've never experienced anything like a pandemic, which essentially took all the air out of our entire industry overnight.
Mike Barnes, our special guest here for the full hour on the Labor Show. You know, Mike, we come into the live broadcast with talking about the Army-Navy game and the game, of course, being played because of the pandemic at West Point. It is a reminder with you on the air tonight. It is a reminder that game traditionally here in Philadelphia, you are behind the biggest events that are held in this city, you and the entire union. Sad in a lot of ways that game wasn't here, and all of those events are not here.
And Chris, it's not just the stagehands. You think about the Army-Navy game. The cadets, the midshipmen, they come in droves. Sure. They rent all the hotel rooms, so all the hotel workers are employed. All the restaurants, the bars that provide, you know, entertainment for the attendees that, you know, off game time, you know, when everybody's out, you know, looking to have a good time during this time of year. The convention center hosts a huge party every year for the Army-Navy game, which employs the convention center crews. And then, of course, you have the stadium event itself, which employs all the stadium workers, all the ancillary work that goes along with that, the parking attendants, the transportation. It's the residual impact of an event, the layers that it goes out affects so many people. We've done some studies saying that the convention center supports hospitality entertainment industry, 190,000 people. It's been reports that are being told to us now that the unemployment, which is affecting the whole entire country, in Philadelphia, 60% of the people unemployed are connected to the hospitality and entertainment industry. This pandemic has disproportionately affected the hospitality and entertainment industry like nothing else has. And you know, I'll be glad when it's over.
And Mike, talk about the 4-point plan that you put into place. You approach the whole thing like you said, a 15-round fight.
So Joe, you know, the nature of our job is to think strategically. You know, whether it's contract negotiations, whether it's an organizing drive, whether it's an internal organizing drive with our own locals, you know, come up with a strategy, know what your goals are, and figure out how to get to that other side. So I remember early in January and February, we were hearing about this virus over in Wuhan and the potential that it could have in the United States. And, you know, we talked about it, but not to the extent where, you know, we were in any way prepared for what we were going to experience. I was sitting in my cigar bar, the Black Horse Pike cigar bar, smoking a cigar, watching the Sixers game with a few other people down there, which we were normally doing. And I remember when that announcement came on that they were going to suspend the season. And
I knew
right then that there was going to be a problem, a big problem that we had to tackle.
And Mike, you know, it's interesting you say that. Soon as I heard that they were that the NBA season was suspended, I turned around and looked at my wife and I said, "Oh man, these are uncharted waters," because you know what big money that is. And for the NBA to make that move, it was a clear sign that we were in uncharted waters.
And I applaud the NBA for having the courage to, because they were the first ones. Up till then, there was a big debate on how to approach this virus and what to do and what not to do. And the NBA was one of the first ones that made that big call. And as soon as they did, you probably recall the hockey league filed suit, and then shows started to cancel. And then seasons started to cancel, and then our movie industry and television industry started to cancel. Within about 2 weeks, it was flatlined.
I know we're bouncing all over the place as we visit with Mike Barnes. Mike will be with us for the full hour. We've got about 90 seconds to 2 minutes until we get to our first commercial break here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Mike, I can't help but stop every time I drive by the Met on Broad Street. and I look at the building and I think about the incredible amount of work that went into bringing that to fruition, and to see it idly sit pains me, sir, when I go up and down Broad on a daily basis.
It was a lot of money invested to bring that theater back. That was built, as you might recall, back in the early 1900s, I think 1906, 1908, as an opera house to compete against the Academy of Music. And back then, opera was the big entertainment vehicle. You know, it wasn't the NBA, and it wasn't the big rock and roll tours. It was opera, and the opera singers were your biggest superstars. For them to build that building 35, 40 years after the Academy was built would be like building, it would be like comparing the Spectrum to the Wells Fargo Center, something that was built 30, 40 years later. It was fabulous when it was built. It unfortunately went into major deterioration. Luckily, the Academy didn't. And when they brought that back, Krause, they did not spare a penny. That design in there brings it back to the original state of 1906. And not only that, they incorporated an opera house setting into one of the coolest clubs in the country. And that's why it is right now the busiest club in the United States. And I give a lot of credit to Jeff Gordon and Live Nation, who are real good employer partners of ours, who gave us voluntary recognition there. There was never a doubt that that building would be staffed with union stagehands. And I'm proud to say that was the first of its kind in the United States where those clubs had represented stagehands in.
We'll take our first commercial break here on The Labor Show with J. Doc and Krause. As we go to a commercial break, once again, J. Doc asked the audience to use theater of the mind and process something that Mike Barnes told us here in the opening segment. 60% plus of those affected by this virus fall into the entertainment space. An amazing number. Back in a moment.
Portions of tonight's edition of The Labor Show are brought to you by IBEW Local 98, DC 33, Local 1637, District 1199C, and News Guild 10.
And back here on The Labor Show with J-Doc, I'm Joe Krause on a Saturday night. J-Doc, as we come to you, hour number one of the two-hour show. Big show tonight, big guest, as we always do, J-Doc. We bring the most influential labor leaders from around the Delaware Valley, and we bring them live.
Absolutely, and I'm so ecstatic to have Mike Barnes on the program. Wish it was under different circumstances. Mike, let's talk about the IATSE safety reopening document. You've got a plan here that's pretty comprehensive: safety, finances, mutual assistance. Can you delve into that a bit?
Sure, Joe. So like you said, that day that the NBA canceled, we knew that there was going to be a tough time ahead. So we immediately met and we came up with a plan that we didn't know how long it was going to take. So we did it in quarterly increments, something like a business plan, right? We broke the year down in the quarter. So we went out April, May into June, hoping that we'd be back into June. And what we focused on were four primary pillars. First of all, being the safety of our members. With the threat of the virus, the physical threat of the virus, we came out with a detailed plan on how to educate everybody on how to keep themselves healthy. That was one of our main priorities. Mm-hmm. Secondly was finances. Knowing that the membership was going to be laid off, we had to figure out where and how to get resources for them. And there was a bunch of different areas that we focused on. The primary one that we settled on was the unemployment. And that was before we knew that they were going to have the enhancement. The enhancement absolutely got us from March to August in a place that was at least tolerable and worked somewhat for the members. But that wasn't enough because there was a lack of benefits. So we had to work with our benefit funds to make sure that people's health and welfare were maintained. I'm proud to say that our international has been able to maintain every single person's health care in Philadelphia throughout the pandemic all the way until March.
Awesome.
And we'll see what happens at that point. But anybody that didn't have enough funds in their resources to cover themselves through their contributions, the overall fund picked them up, so no one has lost their benefits out of IOTSI Local 8 during the pandemic. We then focused on some out-of-the-box type of resources. We have an institution called the Actors Fund that's located in California, New York, that supports actors and stagehands and people in the entertainment industry. Our international made a significant contribution to the Actors Fund, and they provided two $1,000 draws to each member who had a history of work in the industry. Live Nation set up a charity fund for workers in the industry. So we were connecting our members with those type of resources so that they had some income coming through. We then brought in some specialists to actually give us advice on budgeting. And we took people's budgets and we took the resources coming in. We showed them how to compare it to the bills they had going out and you know what they needed to do to you know to close that gap. One of the areas that we were able to draw on because of the CARES Act was the locals' retirement funds, the annuities. Now, you don't like to touch those because they're tax deferred. You want them to grow until you're ready to retire. But in this situation, because of the emergency, they made those funds available to members under a COVID crisis. And Congress, during the CARES Act, actually waived the 10% early withdrawal fee, which helped out a lot and gave the ability to the members who drew on that money 3 years to pay the taxes on that draw, or if they so choose, pay that money back once they go back to work. That was a real good thing that Congress did during the CARES Act that really helped bridge the gap. After we hit safety and finances, we created what we called our mutual assist pillar. And what that was a member-to-member support group. We used a virtual web-based program that the AFL-CIO developed for organizing. And what we did is we actually used our local as the organizing target, and we identified everybody in the local, and we started to match up people's similarities, their likes, their hobbies, and we were identifying and putting people together that had those mutual interests, and then setting up communications between them through Zoom options so that they could start to talk to each other. And of course, we had the questions that we asked, number one, what do you need? And number two, what can you offer? And luckily for us, a lot more of it from our members is what they could offer rather than what they needed. But we would hook up those people with needs and what people had to offer. Some people needed, you know, rides to the grocery store. Some people needed help with getting their funds straightened out. Some people needed help with getting charity applications in. And then you had the people that were good at it, and we would connect them all through this web-based program, which was very helpful. We then set up a virtual web-based community, and the web-based community had three legs to that. One of them was COVID-related courses. So we were teaching everybody about COVID, COVID safety, different things that related to COVID. The other one was craft training, which we teamed up with our international to provide a lot of certification courses. One of them that's ongoing right now is an OSHA 10 course, which we've had over 800 members get their certification during the down period. Mm-hmm. And it was so successful that the international hooked us up, and we give that course across the country now locally. It does to IOTSI members throughout the country. The third piece of that virtual web-based community was our social activities, which ended up being our most popular. So we had a sports talk night. We had a yoga sessions that were given, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. We had cigar. We had happy hour. So it was all kind of different social events. And the members ran all these events. And we were running three events a day, 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 6 o'clock. We were running 5 days a week and two on the weekends. And that communication, and that led to our fourth leg, which was our communication pillar. And we used the Zoom meetings, phone calls, social media, hard letters, because we weren't visiting at the time during the shutdown, to make all that happen. And that communication, that interaction, really raised everybody's spirits and let everybody notice we were in this together, and helped get us to this point where we are right now. And we are actually still using those four pillars exactly how we set them up that first week, to carry us through what we call, as you said earlier, a 15-round fight. And if you count the rounds right now, December, we're around 10. I'm sorry.
That's okay, Mike. You know, first of all, this is so comprehensive and impressive. This may sound like a, you know, but who thought of this? This is incredible. Like, in other words, I was going to ask you the spirit of the membership. There's been so many things going on. People have been out of work, and I've been thinking about you and the members. Just do, like Joe Krause said, every time I drive down the parkway, you guys are the ones that make those big shows and all those things happen. So I think about you and your members a lot, and I was wondering, you know, the spirit of the members and how they're getting through it. There's a lot of foresight here. Where did this plan come from?
Well, we use a lot of internal communication tools with Local 8, just by the nature of what we do. We create messaging, so we're good at creating messaging, and we use that skill set to talk to each other. So when this crisis came up, we had already had the model and the blueprint on how to deal with an issue. Whether that issue was the Pope, the show, the Pope, when the Pope came in, or whether it was the NFL draft, or whether it was the DNC, or whether it's one of the 20 major citywide conventions that come in. What happens is each time, Joe, is this wave of activity comes at us, and it comes at us at very short notice with very little time to prepare. In order to be successful in our industry, we have to be able to communicate with each other, decipher the problem, and solve the problem so that the curtain goes up on time. We applied that same DNA that we have in us to address this problem. And we basically just put our committees together, our young workers, our women's committee, our diversity committee, our stewards committee, all our committees. And we just talked it through and we formulated this plan pretty quickly. And it was a team effort.
Mike Barnes joining us here on The Labor Show with Jaydock and Krause here live on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. As we go to break, Jaydock, I will say this. A lot of times we, the public, we don't understand or comprehend the details.
Oh, the magnitude, man.
The magnitude of the details that go into the NFL draft, that go into the Pope, that go into all of these major events. It's mind-boggling to know what goes. It's just incredible.
Oh, absolutely. And when you say it like that, Joe, it's not a surprise that the same leadership that organizes that has been able to organize a lot of those same resources to accommodate the membership during this extremely difficult time.
Go to a commercial break. We'll continue our visit with Mike Barnes back in a moment.
Portions of tonight's edition of The Labor Show are sponsored by Plumbers Local 690, Sheet Metal Workers Local 19, Iron Workers Local 401, and SEIU Local 32BJ District 1201.
This whole nonsense about not giving workers the right to organize with so-called right to work, that's bad. Something like that comes to my desk, I'll veto it, not just because I'm a Democrat, not just because I'm pro-labor, but because I know for a fact that's not very smart.
And back here live on The Labor Show with Jaydock. I'm Joe Krause, live here on a Saturday night on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Shout out to all of our listeners, Jaydock, who continue to join us every week on The Labor Show. Now 2 hours every Saturday night. And again, coming up in hour number two of the show, our visit with the operating engineers. Now back to a great chat, a great conversation with a very powerful labor leader, I would say, Mike Barnes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mike, we've been talking about, you know, how impressive it has been. During the break, Joe and I were talking about the plan you guys put together. Not surprising because of what you do, but let's also talk about primary objective, you know, during COVID, to maintain the relevancy of the union and through advocating, you know, for your members. You talk about the election, the primary, the CARES Act, HEROES Act, and so much more. Talk about that.
Yeah, and before I go into that, I do got to mention, too, you know, we weren't the only ones doing that. You know, my good friend Johnny Dock from the Electricians, who runs the building trade show, his plan to keep the building trades working.
Oh, yeah.
Working during this period was amazing. I watched that, what he did early. I mean, he came out with some innovative ideas. I'm telling you, before some of the doctors were, actually, about, you know, how to create a safe working environment for the building trades that kept a lot of people safe and employed during that time. So,
and Mike, there was a lot of people doing this. Right, and you and John and all the other building trades managers, through Johnny Dock's leadership, created a model that OSHA uses nationally now. I mean, what our labor leadership did here in Philadelphia, with obviously shutting the jobs down, putting the safety protocols in, created minimal situations where our workers contracted or did not contract COVID, and therefore OSHA picked up on it, and they're using that nationally. And therefore, we were some of the first unions in the country to go back to work. And so, yeah, right on board there. Speaking of Johnny Dock, you know, Johnny was talking about during the election, and Joe, you remember, what a great job Mike Barnes did putting a lot of those things together. And so during this absolutely difficult time, particularly for your members, you've been incredibly active and incredibly relevant during the process.
Well, there was a lot of opportunity. I mean, if you go back all the way as far as the primary, if you remember, you know, the Act 77 was kind of new to everybody, and the mail-in ballot concept was new, right? It was something that people didn't typically do. It was in place, but it wasn't mainstream. So we started right off with the AFL-CIO focusing on promoting mail-in ballot during the primary. If you did your mail-in ballot then, you automatically got the mail-in ballot for the general. So that initiative kicked off early in May, in the beginning of the pandemic. And then the CARES Act, when that came out, it happened pretty quickly, but there was some intense lobbying that went into the CARES Act that some real good things came out of. I mentioned one earlier, which was the waiver of the 10% penalty to allow, you know, people that had these annuities to tap into them during this crisis. And I have to say that Congressman Brendan Boyle was the person who I believe authored the language that went in the CARES Act that got us that relief. We were on the phone with him. We were asking him, you know, for certain relief. Actually, we asked him if he could waive all the taxes on the annuity too. They couldn't go that far. But he did waive the penalty, which was good. And I want to thank him for that. Congressman's also been accessible to us during the HEROES Act, which was passed by Congress. It never made it into law. But over the summertime, late in the summer, going into early fall, we started to try to raise awareness in the community that we were going to need a second stimulus program. This is going back in September, right after the unemployment enhancement ended. And we had two shutdown rallies in Philadelphia where we marched from the Academy of Music up to City Hall. And then the second one, we marched from Independence Hall down to Senator Toomey's office. We had 400 or 500 people in each one of those rallies, and they were peaceful. They were supported by the politicians. There was a lot of cooperation from law enforcement. We didn't have any issues with anybody. It was labor driven. We delivered our message. It was a strong message, and it still needs to be delivered today. And those type of acts, like supporting the CARES Act, supporting the HEROES Act, the members saw that we were fighting on their behalf, even though it wasn't at the bargaining table. It was fighting for them so that they could get some of those resources. We joined with a bunch of employers, people that we typically negotiate with, to create an event called Red Alert. That was a worldwide event in every major city throughout the world: London, Paris, Bonn, New York, Philadelphia, everywhere. We lit up the skylines with red lights to bring awareness of the hospitality people out of work. And that was a big success. And of course, you know, all the effort that went into the presidential election, which in itself is a story.
You know, it's the presidential election, speaking of that, you know, obviously, you know, labor worked incredibly hard, and I know you were right in the thick in the middle of it in regards to the setting up the points where it was like checkpoints on Broad Street to get people to be able to go and vote, people who were in difficult situations or, you know, in areas where they may not have had transportation. That was a heck of a coordinated effort. Tell us a little bit about that.
So again, we've been doing elections forever, right, in the United States, and we've gotten used to the way we did them. And it was a pattern of way we did elections in Philadelphia. You know, right after Labor Day, you'd see a lot of focus, and that focus would start with the AFL-CIO and the different unions, and there would be a lot of door knocking and member-to-member education leading up to big GOTV efforts on election day. With COVID, we didn't have the ability, or there wasn't a comfort level with the door-to-door, member-to-member communication that we've always used to get our members out. So we were trying to think of ways that we'd be successful. So we tried phone banking. And in today's day and age, you know, most people's home phones aren't even their primary phones. Their cell phones are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have blocks and different things like that. And it wasn't as nearly effective as the door-to-door. And that was causing a lot of people concern. And turning that ship around, it was like turning a battleship around.
Sure.
Turning local aid around, we're like a speedboat. We're small. We can turn quick. So what we recognized early on, and I went to Johnny Doc for this and Pat Eighty, and I said to him, you know, I think that these satellite offices are an area where we need to focus on and get people to vote early. You know, why wait till election day and try to turn our vote out when we can start 3 to 4 weeks early? So Doc, as he always does, was very supportive of the stagehands and backed us up with the whole building trades, both financially and with bodies. And what we did is, you know, we took the, at the time, I believe it was 17 satellite locations. They had opened up 7 or 8 of them the first week. And we took a satellite location per day, and we set up a small stage with a small sound system to make sure that we maintained a lot of COVID safety protocol, because we didn't want a big event. We wanted a big social media event so we could draw attention to the satellite locations. So what we did is we teamed up with Live Nation, and we would try to bring some talent out to the stage or bring some high profile speakers to the stage. We would capture that on our cell phones, and then we would actually create our own commercials using software that's on everybody's laptop. And we would create this big social media event and advertise for the next day's event. And all of a sudden, that picked up some steam after about 3 or 4 days, where the amount of hits and the amount of social activity that we were getting was enormous. And it was very successful.
I can tell you this. You know, when we talk about the election, and I know...
Two to the break, J-Doc.
Your members were heavily involved in the phone banking in the process. What's the most amazing, when I sit here and think about it, is even during the most difficult times, Mike, how impressive it is, you know, it's our sentiment and it's our spirit and labor, but the fact that your members are out there at the forefront of the phone banking and getting involved. I think you guys had 22 volunteers that signed up with the AFL-CIO on their phone banking campaign during this, probably not one of them working, okay, down because of the pandemic, and still passionate about supporting, you know, not only IOTC8, but what labor does. The spirit has not left anybody, has it, Mike, even during this most difficult time?
Well, I know we're heading to a break. I'll make this quick. I grew up with 3 older brothers and a younger sister. So we had a little bit of a salty past sometimes in the bars, right? Sometimes you get into a couple scraps. And
couple,
when I said to our local,
we've been there a couple times too, Mike.
Right? What I said to him is, you know, in that bar fight, there's 3 types of people. There are people that run in and start throwing punches. There are people that run out the door scared. And there's people that hide in the bathroom to tell everybody they beat up everybody after the fight.
Right.
I said, which one of those people are you going to be at the end of this COVID one? You want to be the guy that's in there throwing punches. You want to be out as best as you can. So we created opportunities where people could come out if they wanted to those marches and they with the masks and everything. But for the people that couldn't, we created that social media attack or confront or however we want to phrase it, that people could participate. And while you saw the 22 on the phones, there was hundreds of people in the background that were echoing these messages and communicating this Get Out the Vote effort that really helped out that whole campaign.
Visiting with Mike Barnes here on The Labor Show, one segment to go. on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Back in a moment.
Portions of tonight's edition of The Labor Show are sponsored by Sprinkler Fitters Local 692, Iron Workers Local 405, and Steam Fitters Local 420.
We're going to try to work with Republicans in a bipartisan way to find solutions to what really is not working.
And great to visit with Mike Barnes of IATSE Local 8, J. Doc. Full hour of the program with Mike Barnes. One segment to go. And Mike, as we transition into the final segment, I guess at this point, it's time to prepare for what's next. You're still here. Your members are still here. Your plan has been executed. Now get ready for what's next.
Yeah, and that's right now one of the most important things. You know, you always say you got to have hope. And the good thing about this, if there's anything good about this, is that there was always an end to this. You know, we didn't know when it was going to be, but this was not going to be in perpetuity, this virus, right? So, you know, with the announcement of the vaccine, that gave us a lot of a lot of optimism that this thing is going to end, right? And even though we have a pretty tough winter coming up ahead of us, but looking ahead, what we see is we've already started back with our movie and television sector. That started back in September. We worked with the employers to develop a A1 safety plan, which included, you know, engineering of the work sites. It included preparation, disinfecting, an extensive testing program, all the CDC guidelines when we were at work, and then testing and tracing to follow up. And it was similar to what you see with the building trades with Johnny Doc's programs. And they allowed us to just get done working three significant pieces of business. We had Mike Shalomon, who produced Sixth Sense. He just did his second season for Servant for Apple TV. We had The Mayor of Easttown, which will be coming out on HBO. It'll be a big miniseries. And we just had a major motion picture with Netflix starring Adam Sandler called Hustle. We think, we have some other ones coming in January. That gives us some employment until the live theater opens up. But we're optimistic that, you know, as the vaccine is rolled out and the weather starts to turn in a favorable way to us, that our rock and roll industry should start to open up their amphitheaters in mid-spring and hopefully start doing some outdoor shows in early summer. And, you know, being a little bit more optimistic, we're hoping that the trade show could open up in June, maybe move the car show and open it up in June. So the first event can be held there and we can get back up to speed with the car show. And then our theaters coming back in Q3, Q4 of 21. And at least that gives us a timeline to kind of work it out. And we've said from the beginning, this is like a 15-round fight. Mm-hmm. This is the 10th round. Each month is a round for us. So the 15th round would be May. If it goes much longer than 15 rounds, I'm going to have to come up with some better analogies.
Sure. But you know what's amazing, though, Mike? You're right, though. You know, the light is at the end of the tunnel. The vaccine is actually here. And, you know, there's plans. Everybody's, you know, there's plans now for people to go back to work for all the projects. Convention Center, when do you think that's going to be back up and running at a nice pace, so we can start there as well.
So the good thing about the convention center is that the engineering in the convention, which is a major component to fighting this virus, air exchange is key to this. And, you know, we hear a lot about indoor dining versus outdoor dining, tent versus indoor. That convention center engineering has been invested in by John McNichol and the Pennsylvania Convention Center Pennsylvania Convention Center and the state. So it's a gold standard for the world. Every bit of COVID-related safety measure, as far as the filtration, the way, you know, just the cleanliness, the wipe downs, is A1. We could have a show maybe not in the next 3 weeks because of the spike, but very quickly we could have a show in there maintaining social distancing, and it would be a safe show. The challenge that we have is, you know, we're going into the traditionally slow period of the convention center, which is the holiday period. And people are still a little bit reluctant to get into closed spaces together. The other challenge with the convention center is that a lot of our citywide conventions require travel. People come from all over the world to come to our convention center, and travel on airlines is still, you know, a questionable thing for a lot of people. So getting the consumer confidence is the key to the convention center opening up. As far as the logistics wise, we're ready. We're safely ready to go. I mean, we just had the whole, you know, the voting countdown at the convention center. There is activity in that convention center, and it can be done safely. As the vaccine comes into play, and they're saying, you know, you guys have all watched the news. It's going to go to the first responders and the elderly and people in that sector first. But as it gets to the general public in the second quarter, by the time we start getting midway through the second quarter into June, we think between the combination of people getting the vaccine, people have gotten the virus that have some type of immunity, and the fact that the weather's getting nicer and the safety measures in there, that we could have the car show there in June. And once we have the car show, there's no reason why we can't have every show that's already been booked there back on track.
Mike, real quick, because we only got a couple seconds left. It's the holiday season. If you got something to say, I'd love to hear a little shout out to your members. Talk to them.
The members have been tremendous with this whole entire thing. We've asked them, what do you need? And it's silence. When we ask them what you can offer, it's a roar. And it's been that way for 10 months. We had a coat drive today. We had a food drive today. We have a secret Santa for our members coming up next week. Our members respond to challenges. They don't cower down to challenges. This is the biggest challenges that they faced. This is the tallest I've seen them stand. And I want to say it's been a pleasure working with the Local 8 members, the IATSE members, and the labor community in whole, who has really responded well to the challenge that we're under right now.
Mike Barnes, I want to thank you for everything you're doing. And I want to thank the IATSE 8 members and the IATSE members from across the country for being who you are and for holding things down during the COVID-19 pandemic. Have a happy holiday season. I know you'll be back soon.
Remember, guys, the show must go on. Thank you.
Awesome, Mike.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Labor Show with J-Doc and Krause. On behalf of Mike Barnes, our special guest, we thank Mike and all of his members. Stay tuned. Hour number two, J-Doc, the operating engineers. See you next time, everybody.
Tonight's edition of The Labor Show have been sponsored by Sheet Metal Workers Local 19, CWA, Communication Workers of America, and AFSCME Local 1739, DC 47. This program is a paid commercial announcement and does not reflect the views of WPHT or its management.